Hello, and welcome to another edition of Meet the Expert for Divorce and Parenting Today.com. My name is Garnet Miro, and today I'm excited to have on our call Mr. Mark Baer. Mark is the owner of Mark B. Baer Incorporated, a professional law corporation in the greater Los Angeles area. And Mark's firm, I'm reading on his LinkedIn profile here, it assists people in becoming independent of their spouses or significant others with integrity, by evaluating and facilitating solutions that are respectful to each other and their families. They accomplish this by providing a thoughtful, creative, and caring environment. Clearly, this is not a traditional introduction to a divorce process that many people are accustomed to. So, Mark, welcome to our call today.
Thank you.
All right. So, listen, I'd like to know a little bit more about who you are, Mark. Tell us a bit about who you are, please.
Well, I'm coming from the background, I guess, as somebody who was a minor child when my parents started to divorce. And so I went into family law with a different perspective than most people to begin with.
Mm.
My experience now, having been practicing for about 21 years, is that most people who are doing family law may be divorced themselves, may have had their parents divorce, but generally speaking, only a very small percentage were minor children when their parents divorced. And the reason, from what I understand, is because the system is set up in such a way that there's only so much somebody can do, or at least that was the case until recently, and they didn't want to be involved in causing the kind of destruction that they themselves experienced as collateral damage. So I went into family law to try to help prevent my clients from causing the kind of destruction that I and my siblings experienced. And then have since learned other ways of doing things, both through mediation and through collaborative divorce, through various trainings that I've taken, lots of reading, and getting very involved in psychological associations as affiliate members, since I'm not myself a psychologist.
Right. Actually, that's an interesting point. I see that you've actually written a few articles on psychology and family law. Is that true?
Well, I'm an affiliate member of the San Gabriel Valley Psychological Association and the then president and editor of their bi-monthly newsletter had approached me about writing an article for their newsletter. I had never written anything at the time other than for court, for example, and so was uncomfortable about the idea. In any event, she convinced me to do it. I wrote my first article. It was called Marital Russian Roulette. It was published in September of 2008. It was well received, and she asked me to be a regular columnist. So I have been a regular columnist for their newsletter since September of 2008. And like I said, an article comes out every 2 months. And in 2010, they won the award from the California Psychological Association as being the most outstanding psychological association newsletter in California. And one of the named factors in that award decision was my column.
Wow.
It didn't win anything subsequently, but it's also my understanding that it wasn't even submitted by the editor or anybody else to be up for any award subsequently. So the last time it was submitted, it got that.
That's excellent. And so through that, how does that make you feel as far as being able to get your message out to a different discipline?
As far as writing a column to the Psychological Association, I think in and of itself, you're talking about the San Gabriel Valley Psychological Association. It would be sent out to whoever the members are. You're not talking a enormous number of members, you know, relative to the number of people who actually get to read my stuff. Because what ultimately I decided to do was to take those articles and then put them out there in the social media for them to be available to many more people than just the members of the San Gabriel Valley Psychological Association.
Yeah, got it. It's shared, you know, on the World Wide Web, as they say.
Yes, and but the other aspect is people reading them get one sense, and then it has segued into other stuff like being asked to present. So, for example, I've been writing for their newsletter since September of 08, and yet presented with one of the psychologists at their last lunch meeting on Friday of last week. Uh-huh. And it wasn't until I presented that some of the psychologists were even open to potentially sending business my way, for example. It's one thing, if it's in written format, you don't know if they read it.
Right.
You don't know if they get it. And when you hear somebody speak, you get a different sense anyway. So it was fascinating seeing three people who I'd known for years come running up to me after I finished presenting and said, after hearing me present, they want to start sending business my direction.
Yeah.
I was absolutely shocked that they didn't feel that way after having read some of my articles, but that's okay. The other thing that I noticed and it made me very pleased to learn was on January 23rd, it was announced that I was selected as a Southern California super lawyer, which is only 5% of the attorneys in Southern California satisfy that requirement, whatever the vetting process is.
Uh-huh.
And we decided to do a press release of my having been selected. And interestingly enough, that press release got picked up by a lot of places, but one of them was the California Psychological Association.
Uh-huh.
I went onto their website where they have all this news about psychological events and information for their members. And really, the only thing that was not psychologically oriented that was on there was this press release that I had been selected as a Southern California super lawyer. And the only explanation I can come up with is that the psychological community is a big fan of mine.
Mm-hmm. That's impressive. And how do you think that helps you with when you're helping your clients that come through the door for you, knowing that, you know, they have other professionals referring them to you?
Well, if the person who comes to my office happens to have been referred by a psychologist, and by the way, before I go there, I do want to say that whether the person's referred to me by a psychologist or not, that's not the point. The point is that the fact that the psychologists and mental health professionals seem to very much appreciate my perspective on handling family law, says more about the interplay of psychology and family law, and that they very much approve of the way that I'm doing it, whether it happens to be with somebody who was referred here by one of them or not. But but as far as somebody, how does it make me feel if somebody is referred here by them? I would assume that if they were referred by a mental health professional, by a psychologist, that it may very well be that the person was in marriage counseling. It might be that they were in some kind of therapy. And the last thing that a therapist would want to see happen would be for all of the work that they have done with this person to be basically thrown up in the air and utter chaos created because they send somebody or to an attorney who ends up wreaking havoc.
Yeah.
Or they select the patient selects somebody who actually does that. And so I think that what good is that they're obviously of the belief that I'm not going to damage the progress that hopefully they've been making with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And also that the person is being protected, because this is a big element about which I've written, actually, because a lot of people think that if somebody is trying to do something in a conciliatory manner, that they are not, in fact, protecting the person. And I had to write on this topic when I realized what was going on. And I had heard this from other attorneys, and then who do mediation and collaborative type work, and I didn't believe it. And then I heard a psychologist who I didn't know say that at a meeting that I went to, that this all sounds grand, but when push comes to shove and I have a patient that needs to go to a family law attorney, I'm going to send them to a very aggressive litigator because they need to make sure that their rights are protected.
Interesting.
The reality is that rights are a legal construct in terms of, you know, what is it that the law says that people are entitled to. I think that if a couple does not have children, then they have one right, and that right is to go from being married to becoming unmarried, and that everything else is fair game, and that they can resolve that however they wish. And the reality is that approximately 2-3% of cases ultimately go in front of a judge for a full-blown trial. So in reality, what that means is that 97-98% of cases that are litigated are ultimately being resolved because the clients are agreeing on stuff. They can agree on stuff as long as it's not against public policy or illegal. They can agree on anything they want.
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore, they may not be agreeing on a 50-50 division of community property, or they may. They may be agreeing to guideline child support, or they may be agreeing to a non-guideline child support order as long as the child is protected by such an agreement. So, therefore, I'm of the premise that they can do this when they end up litigating the hell out of their case, or they can do this from the beginning and understand that their right is to become unmarried and everything else is fair to game, subject to negotiation. And whatever they agree on is what they agree on through the help of professionals assisting them in resolving their issues. If they happen to have children,
yes.
Even if those children are grown up, they have two rights. They have a right to become unmarried, and they have a right to co-parent their children. And you can still co-parent your children when they're 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're independent in the sense that you're not making legal decisions for them, and you're not dealing with whose home they're going to be in. But nevertheless, they are still your children.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. What about children that are, say, teenagers or less? Is there another level of what you're calling the rights here?
Well, no, I mean, the rights are the same in the sense that you're still co-parenting your children. It's just the issue that you have, obviously, to deal with the fact that you now have two households, for example, and you have to deal with how that is going to impact the child in terms of custody and visitation.
Yeah.
And one of the things that a lot of countries have recognized, and unfortunately in the United States, and I believe it was a quote from Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill said, "The United States ultimately gets things right, but they do so only after they've tried everything else and nothing else worked." So other countries have recognized, for example, that there are certain terms that cause people to act in a certain way. And if you're dealing with primary custody or you're dealing with custody, it's a prize for the taking, and they fight over it. So, for instance, in British Columbia, they just changed that term. They no longer have anything in their family law code relating to custody. They call it guardianship.
Uh-huh.
And at the outset, they're both considered to be equal guardians, unless otherwise established. But here we like to keep those terms. And by the way, in England the United Kingdom, they've changed terms too, as they have in Australia. But we like to keep terms. We like to fight here. So we like to keep certain terms. And maybe one day we'll come to follow suit with a lot of these other countries, which, by the way, got their legal system from the same place ours came from.
Yeah, yes, of course.
From England, so did Australia, so did many parts of Canada. And in Australia, they're doing stuff differently than they do here now. And England followed suit, as did Wales. And British Columbia and other parts of Canada followed suit too. And yet we're the only holdout.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting? I was just going to ask you what kind of trends you see. I suppose this is one of them, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Are you seeing this equal guardianship concept, although it might be called something different in the States, are you seeing that shifting in any one direction at all as far as access to children, be it the mother or the father? Are you seeing any trends with regards to that?
I've seen trends in the sense that it's become known that the ability to parent is not gender-based, and so a father can be as good a parent as a mother. And by the way, it's very possible that neither parent can be good, and you don't get any kind of training manual to have a kid. It doesn't take much to procreate.
Correct.
And there are many parents out there whose parenting skills are very much in question, and one would wonder how they were even allowed to keep their kids, considering how they conduct themselves in the course of a family law matter and the damage that is caused to the children. But I'd say that what I've seen increasing is increasing time for fathers, and a lot of places have this equal parentage thing as a big father's rights movement. Places are starting from the premise of, for example, equal parenting, and then go from there. I think that in Canada, for instance, they're very clear at this point in British Columbia that it's for the best interest of the child, and that's it. We can pay lip service to many things. We can say, we can call something best interest of child or whatever we want to call it.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't mean we're actually following through on that. It seems the way that they've set their system up, they're very much so trying to do what's in the best interest of the child. That may start from the premise of equal parenting, but it doesn't mean it's going to end up that way. And I don't know that I would agree that 50-50 is what's in the best interest of the child. I think it's very much determined by the particular family, the particular parents, the particular children. And one of the things that there's been research on is that parents oftentimes, more often than not, even if they aren't litigating their case and they're actually coming to an agreement on the custody and visitation, they're not really taking into account what it is that the children want. And so the children feel like they're just basically going with dad when they have to go with dad, and going with mom when they have to go with mom. And when they're with dad, they might have a party to go to, or they might have a sleepover they really want to do. But because it's dad's time, they're not even comfortable asking dad for it, because dad's going to say, it's my time. If you go do the sleepover to your friend's party, that I don't get to spend it with you.
Right.
And they're not really taking into account their children. And ultimately, this has long-term impact on the child. The children, people think, are resilient. Children are resilient as far as if a couple is having marital problems and the husband is going to move out of the master bedroom and stay in the house, and they have to put two children that were in separate rooms in one room to share so that father can have that bedroom. Children are resilient to that. But in terms of long-term impact on children, children who come from a family that had a very destructive divorce, they basically, people have to understand that you can only give what you have and you can only teach what you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were raised in a family where they could never problem solve and they fought over everything and everything had to go in front of a judge to make a decision and just bad parenting in this regard, and the children were aware of this, and even if the parents try to hide it, there's much to be said for emotional intelligence in terms of a child picking up on body language and the like. But if they are aware of this and they've seen it, then what is it that they have available in terms of when they get into a relationship? Do they want to get married? Do they want to have children? If they get married and have children, are they staying in a very, very, very bad marriage for the sake of the children, so they think, because they were minors in a divorced family and they know how badly it went, and therefore they're going to stick out a very bad marriage because they don't want the kids to have that experience, because they think that the only way that it's going to turn out is destructive like they had. Uh-huh. And I'm going to say that if they're going to be, if that's what's going to happen, it's very possible that the marriage could end up breaking up before the children are 18 years old. The parents will hold it together for as long as they can, but they will build up as much animosity.
Uh-huh.
They're going to, the anger that's going to pent up between them is going to be much greater than it would have been had they just said, you know, this isn't working out. We tried it. We went to marriage counseling, whatever, and they stuck it out. I think that I've seen that they get even more nasty and angry toward each other, and it causes long-term problems. So there's lots of aspects in terms of what's the child going to do if they end up in a failed marriage. Are they going to get married? Are they going to have kids? How are they going to deal with their marriage? Are they going to be taught that if they're having marital problems, that rather than trying to problem solve, because nothing is going to be without problems,
yeah,
are they just going to walk away? You know, I was talking with somebody just the other day who there was a school event for the child, and the mom was at the school event, and the father arrived at the school event. The father's trying to call the mom to find out where they are, and the mom wouldn't answer the phone, and the father finally finds the child and the mom, and as soon as the father approached them, mom walked off with child. Now, what does that say to the child?
Mm-hmm.
Is that in the best interest of the child? What is that saying to the child? Because the child knows that child is one half the product of mom and one half the product of dad. What is that saying to the child? And what is that teaching the child in terms of if something doesn't work, you've just shown it to them. Just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there are, and it's not just my opinion, there's been ample research on this in writing.
Yes. Yeah. It's definitely, I think with divorce and parenting, it's one of those quote unquote typical challenges that, you know, newly divorced couples will face is how do they interact in front of their children and the public, because that's all mirrored behavior later on with your children. So I really appreciate that. And I really like how you said, you only give what you have and teach what you know. That's such a great line. This is really good, Mark. Now I see that you're also listed as a keynote speaker at the Divorce Expo coming up in the Detroit area. Now that's in March of 2012. Tell us a little bit more about what this expo is all about.
That's interesting. It's a community-based thing for the Detroit metropolitan community, where they're going to be providing constructive alternatives to handling family law matters. And they're going to be educating both or providing information to lawyers, to people who are peripherally involved in family law dynamics, whether they're accountants, mental health professionals, as well as people who are themselves divorced, may be going through a divorce, may be thinking about going through a divorce, and they've asked me to keynote, which was really interesting because I'm obviously, well, not obviously, but I'm in California, California, so I'm not trained in Michigan law, and they're importing me to go and speak on constructive ways of handling family law. One of the things that I understand that they've noticed is that not very many lawyers seemed open to the interested, although I don't know that they approached anybody else, but they did try to approach them as far as being presenters, not necessarily keynote, but presenters.
Gotcha.
And a lot of lawyers didn't seem so interested because I think the percentage of lawyers who want to do things in a constructive way or think that they can do things or think that it should be done in a constructive way is not quite at a number that I would wish it were.
Sure. Yeah.
But I'm doing the keynote on what does Mark Baer see as the future of family law in the United States, which is going to be kind of fun.
That sounds like a lot of fun. All right. Well, listen, I know you're a busy man and you've got a lot of things to go to, so I want to let you run. But before that, I want to know, is there any way that people can get a hold of you if they want to learn more about what you are and what you do?
Well, my website is markbaeresq.com. So that's markbaeresq.com. And on the website, it has everything. It has all of my articles in the article section, has all of the articles that have been published in the San Gabriel Valley Psychological Association's newsletter. They've been scanned and are PDFs. It has my blog, which are not typical blogs. They're researched blogs written in a way in which, while they're academic, in the sense that they're linked to research, they're written so that anybody can understand and relate. They're very much written like a story. So people have told me that while they're, even if they do family law work, while they're written in a work, while they're something they can learn from,
uh-huh.
They're very much in a story format and not unpleasant reading. They actually enjoy reading them and learn stuff. And those then get edited down typically to be in my article column for the psychological newsletter. So they might be 2,000 word, the last one was even more than that, blogs with links to all the research, and then they get edited down to about 700 words for the Psychological Association's newsletter. The press that I've received would be found under the section called In the News Press. That would have... If I've been asked to write an article in some other publication other than the Psychological Association's newsletter, it would be in that section. If somebody wrote about me, it would be in that section. If I've been in a radio interview, you might find it in that section. And most of the press that I've received is as a result not of my Psychological Association newsletters, but of the actual blogs.
Yeah, really good. And I would echo that, you know, I have seen your blog, I've visited it many times, and your Facebook and your LinkedIn, and you definitely have a very prolific side to getting your message out there, and I know I have really appreciated reading much of your content, so I just wanted to say thank you for sharing that gift that you have.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So thank you very much. I'm Garnet Miro with divorceandparentingtoday.com, and our guest today has been Mark Baer, and I hope our paths cross again, Mark.
All right. Well, thank you so much for me to speak.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.